The Cannabis Conversation. A European perspective on the emerging legal cannabis industry.
Welcome to the Cannabis Conversation with Anuj Desai, where we explore the new legal cannabis industry by speaking to the professionals that helped me to shape it. This show is sponsored by our great friends at Lumino. For those that don't know Lumino, they are a boutique HR and recruitment agency for the European cannabis industry. We've had multiple guests who've worked with these guys to help build their teams and have always been very happy, so I can totally vouch for them. I always say that they are some of my favourite people in the industry, and I always send candidates to get in touch with me their way to help them get started in this space. So if you need any help with your HR recruitment, they are absolutely the best people to speak to. Get in touch with them at luminorecruit.com. Now, on with the show. We have a great one about cannabis and animals coming up. Enjoy. On today's show, I have Tim Hsu. Tim is CEO of VetCBD, who are a US-based cannabinoid therapeutics company focused on animals. Tim, welcome. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on, Anuj.
No, real pleasure. Pets and animals has been something I've wanted to cover for ages, actually. So I'm really glad I managed to get you on the show.
Yeah, it's a important topic. You know, it's one that doesn't always get a lot of time in the spotlight when it comes to legalization matters, but one that is nonetheless just as important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And before we kind of get into it, where in the world are you today?
So I am in LA. We've got a little bit of sunshine today, so always appreciative of that.
Good, which is, you know, one of the kind of centers of cannabis in the, or legal cannabis, let's say, in the world. How are you kind of seeing things shape up there?
You know, it's interesting. This is a market that, you know, traditional markets move fairly slowly, but the cannabis and the hemp market is a fascinating market because of how quickly it moves. It really feels like every month things are changing. Every month, you know, there's new legislation, new regulations, new markets coming online. So it's a incredibly fast-paced industry, and it's one that's still in its infancy, but, you know, it's rapidly developing, not just here in the US, but also around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's good on a kind of weekly basis. There's a bit of news coming out from all corners of the globe, actually. It's interesting to see how different countries are approaching it.
Yeah. Different countries. You want to talk about like things like the THC limits on hemp, where, you know, here in the US, it's 0.3%. Other parts of the world, it's 0.2, 0.1, 1%. And, you know, let's be real here. These numbers are completely arbitrary.
Yeah, totally. It's funny how they've arrived at these things. But hopefully, you know, as these things open up, there's a level of harmonization can happen at some point. That's a much bigger topic, which we're not here to talk about today. We'll talk about our kind of four-legged friends, or not necessarily four-legged, but our animal friends. Before we start on that topic, though, can we kick off with a bit about you, actually? So a bit about your background and what were you doing before and how and why did you get into the cannabis industry?
Sure. So I was practicing in general emergency critical care medicine. And for me, the thing that really opened my eyes up to this was that I saw the impact of medical cannabis on the human side of things. You know, you saw a lot of this evidence coming out that said that cannabis or different components of cannabis could be beneficial for things like pain or for seizure control or potentially for cancer. And pretty much all of it was focused on humans. So I had to ask myself, well, you know, if we can apply this medically to humans, is there a possibility that we can apply it medically to animals as well? The big question was that, well, you know, most people, when they thought about cannabis, they really only thought about THC. And so, you know, I had to look at it from that component as well and say, well, is this all about THC or are there other components of the plant that could be beneficial without the side effects? And that's where I really started taking a deep look at CBD and looking at the potential value of CBD and just started formulating. You started formulating and providing samples and product to people and getting their feedback. And it turns out that CBD and other cannabinoids do have a lot of therapeutic benefits for not just humans, but animals as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And so when you say you're practicing general medicine, is that for humans?
For animals, strictly for animals.
Yeah. I mean, this is really a topic I know very little about, so I'm going to kind of assume stuff from the human world. But when I speak to a lot of doctors, they said that they were taught very little, if anything, about the endocannabinoid system and how our bodies interact with cannabis. I assume it's very similar in the vet world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I like to do because of how eye-opening it is to talk to medical professionals, especially ones that recently graduated from schools. And the reason why it's so eye-opening is because I'll talk to veterinarians, veterinary nursing students, I'll talk to human doctors and human nursing students, recent graduates, and I'll ask them, how much about the endocannabinoid system did you learn in school? More often times than not, the answer is zero or hardly anything. You know, maybe a mention of it here or there, but pretty much nothing. And, you know, these are folks that are currently practicing or about to practice, and they have been taught nothing about the endocannabinoid system. And the endocannabinoid system, we've known about it for over 30 years now, but we're still not teaching it in professional healthcare schools. And we have to ask ourselves why that is. The analogy that I always bring up is this is the same thing as if you went to your doctor and you asked them about the endocrine system and what it potentially means if you have a disruption in your endocrine system. So say for older males, you know, what does it mean to have low testosterone levels? Or for women, changes in, you know, estrogen levels. Now imagine if you went to your doctor and you talked to them about that and they said, I don't know anything about the endocrine system and I don't know what hormones are or I don't know what they do. I was never taught about hormones or the endocrine system in school. That's essentially where we're at right now. Because if you go to your doctor and you say, you know, what's this about the endocannabinoid system? You know, what does it potentially mean if my CB1 receptors are encoded differently from somebody else's or my circulating anandamide levels are abnormally low? The response that you get is, I don't know. I don't know anything about the endocannabinoid system or endocannabinoids. And that's very unfortunate because we're doing our patients a disservice by not being able to provide them the educational information and medical information that they need to have a better understanding of their health and wellness.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, such an oft repeated story that I hear from medical professionals. So yeah, I completely understand where you come from on that. And so if you weren't sort of taught about it in school, if I can ask, what was the sort of trigger that made you think about, you know, applying your knowledge of cannabis from other sources to the animal world?
Well, so that's my background as a veterinarian, is to always look at ways of improving the health and well-being of animals. And so my approach for cannabis is, or for any potential therapeutic actually, is that if it offers benefits, then we need to be able to explore it. And we need to be able to explore it even to find out if it doesn't offer any benefits. You know, so if somebody came up to me and said, hey, I heard, you know, this or that can be beneficial for, you know, this or that condition, I can't just dismiss it, right? If I don't know anything about it. I have to do a deep dive and say, okay, well, let's take a look at what this is. You know, let's take a look at the studies that have been done. Let's take a look at the facts and evidence, and then let's evaluate the everything from a scientific and rational lens to be able to say whether or not this could potentially help patients. And if it doesn't, then okay, at least we know, you know, at least we took a good hard look and we took a good effort to find that out. But if it does, then we've got something that could potentially benefit patients. And if that's the case, then not only do we need to provide that information to clients and patients, but we need to be able to offer them the means to be able to access those therapeutics, right? Because it does no good if you say, hey, cannabis can be beneficial, but then they say, well, how do I get access to it? And you say, oh, I don't know. I can't help you with that. Well, that doesn't do any good, right? You might as well not have said anything about it because then you've potentially given them false hope. So for me, it's not just about providing the information, the education, and the research, but also providing the means to access.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's huge amounts to explore, isn't there? And we're just at the beginning of the research. So it must be, you know, fascinating from a kind of science perspective of the possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the CB1 receptor, which is one of the endocannabinoid receptors that are found throughout the body, it's the most numerous G protein coupled receptor in the brain. And so this is a receptor that is found all throughout the brain, and it has huge impacts on the way that we function. You know, this is just the brain alone. Wherever we've looked in the body, and when I say we, I mean scientists in general, there have been CB receptors that have been found, you know, whether it's the skin or the organs like the circulatory system or the GI tract or the kidneys. Everywhere scientists are looking, they're finding cannabinoid receptors. And so what this means is that the endocannabinoid system plays a huge role in all physiological aspects. And the role that it has is homeostasis, which means regulation. So it prevents there from being too little or too much of something. And this is absolutely fascinating because this is perhaps one of the most important medical discoveries in our lifetime, is that there is this entire physiological system that's deeply intertwined with all other physiological systems that we know very little about, but that we've known about for 3 decades. But for some reason, we shy away from really taking a look at it and putting it under a lens that will elucidate that knowledge so that that way we can pass that information on to our patients that need that information the most.
Yeah. I think on a personal level, there's something quite spiritual as well about cannabis being about bringing things into balance. So I quite like that side of things. But again, that's a slightly different topic. Maybe we could talk about your business now, Vet CBD. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So the goal of the company is to improve the well-being of animals around the world. And we choose to do that by looking at cannabinoid therapeutics and the endocannabinoid system and getting a better understanding of it. Right now, the industry is still very early stage. You know, everyone talks about CBD, but that's really the tip of the iceberg. The cannabis plant has been called a pharmacological treasure trove. And the reason why is because there's been estimated to be over 500 different active pharmacological components to the plant, with over 120 of those being different cannabinoids. And really, when we look at the cannabinoids, we've really only touched on two, you know, primarily THC and CBD. We are starting to see more cannabinoids come out into the market, like CBC and CBG, but we really know very little about them in terms of the studies and the trials that have been done looking at, you know, things like CBC, CBG, CBN. There's hardly anything out there. And that's what makes it so fascinating, is because this, we know that we're at the tip of the iceberg, and it's an incredibly large iceberg, but we're really just scratching the surface of things. And that's what's so exciting about this.
Yeah, absolutely. And so despite the name, your products contain, you know, the full range of cannabinoids available, so including THC?
Yeah, so we utilize full spectrum products. And so when we're looking at full spectrum products, generally, in addition to CBD, they contain THC, CBC, CBG. Occasionally, they might have other components like CBDA or CBN. But we are also working on other formulations as well, looking at other components of the cannabis plant.
And what kind of sort of delivery methods are they? Are they pills, or are they oils, or are they similar to kind of the human products?
Yeah. So two primary delivery methods is oral and topical. Now, oral is generally used for systemic purposes, so things that affect the body as a whole, and then topical is used for more localized surface things.
Fantastic. And how many kind of products are you got? Are you just playing around with different ratios and formulations of cannabinoids in those?
Yeah. So right now we've got a couple different formulations, primarily using two different ratios, but we are exploring other components of the plant, as I mentioned before. So, you know, some of the more popular cannabinoids that are now available on the market, like CBG, you know, that's one of the things that's really fascinating about this market, is because the science and the research component of it has lagged, and a lot of medical institutions, a lot of universities have shied away from this plant. The market has come and said, you know what? The market is just going to do what it's going to do. And so the research and the science lags behind the market, and the market is what really drives things and pushes things forward, right? So in general, when we're looking at the market, we're now seeing Delta 8, we're seeing THC acetate, Delta 10, you know, we're seeing CBC, CBN, And it's the market's kind of going pretty wild here, but we don't have the research to be able to back it up and say, okay, you know, are some of these claims behind CBG or CBC, are they valid? Do they actually help with this or that condition? Quite frankly, we don't know. There's some preclinical evidence out there, but, you know, preclinical evidence only goes so far. It's mostly done with test tubes, petri dishes, or they do these studies on lab animals like mice and rats. But, you know, we really don't have as many studies that are looking at humans or dogs, cats, or horses.
Right. And I was going to come and ask you when we get onto the sort of general topic about specific animals, but that's great to hear and about vet CBD. Just while we're kind of rounding out that little section, how's it been for you as a business, particularly in relation to COVID? But, you know, you're a young business. How have you found the whole journey?
Well, I mean, by far the most rewarding aspect of it is the interaction that we have with our clients. You know, when we hear about people who have run out of options and cannabis is the only thing that worked for them, I mean, it just brings validation. It brings joy to everything that we do. You know, there's one couple that I met a few years ago who their dog was having grand mal seizures on a daily basis. This was an epileptic dog, meaning that, you know, it would have seizures. And these were full-blown seizures that were happening on a daily basis. And the dog was on anti-seizure medications, but still had these seizures on a daily basis. And for them, they felt like they had run out of options. So they were actually considering euthanasia because they didn't want to see their dog suffer through these seizures every single day. And they felt hopeless because they were doing everything that they should be, right? They were using these anti-seizure medications, but the dog was still having seizures and it really impacted the quality of life. And so they said, you know what? They've heard these stories about cannabis and CBD being used for seizures in children and epileptic patients in humans. And it said, you know what? Why not? Why not just give it one last shot? It's better than euthanasia. And so they did. And turns out it did control the dog's seizures and the dog stopped having seizures. And so this restored that quality of life. And, you know, this quite literally saved that dog from euthanasia. And we hear this time and time again about other animals that are senior animals that have difficulty getting around. And, you know, they may have already tried different medications, but either the medications had limited efficacy or had severe side effects. And so the owner said, you know what, why not? Let's just try cannabis and, you know, let's see what it can do. And a lot of times it brings about remarkable turnaround in terms of quality of life. And so to be able to participate in that, to be able to offer that to pet owners is something that I'm incredibly grateful for.
Yeah, I suppose people must come to you and they must already be open to the idea of cannabis, I assume, if they're going to come see you.
Yeah, I mean, it's yes and no, because, you know, there is a lot of education that needs to be done, right? When I first started 6 years ago, you know, everybody, when they thought about cannabis, they only thought about THC. Nowadays, the conversations change. You know, nowadays, hemp has really entered the conversation. CBD has really entered the conversation. And, you know, it's a constant dynamic because, you know, people now think that, you know, hemp is a separate plant from cannabis, which it's not. It's the same plant. It just has a specific definition in terms of THC content. But, you know, nowadays, people are much more accepting because they realize and they understand how it can be beneficial medically. You know, it's not just a bunch of stereotypes that immediately come to most people's head when they think about cannabis. But nowadays, people are realizing that the plant actually has therapeutic benefits and therapeutic potential. So there still remains a lot to educate people on because, you know, there's still a lot of misunderstanding out there. For example, people may find hemp products that only contain hemp seed oil, but don't contain any cannabinoids. And they make it confused and because they heard that, you know, hemp can be beneficial, but then they pick up a product that's only hemp seed oil and they say, well, it didn't really do anything. And, you know, we have to explain the reason why is because it doesn't actually contain any cannabinoids.
Yeah. Huge amounts of education, which I think, you know, it's funny because I'm surrounded by this and I work in this space. So, you know, we talk about these things quite freely, but
it does still surprise me, the general level of knowledge amongst the general public. There is a huge amount of work that needs to be done, but hopefully these things will get better over time. But let's move on to the kind of main topic of cannabis and animals and pets. And look, like I said before, it's a topic I've known very little about. So I'm going to ask you some really naughty 101 questions. But, you know, maybe we just start, you know, we've referred to the endocannabinoid system. Do animals have the same type of ECS as humans do? And are there any similarities and differences? And actually, take a step back from that. Can I just apply this to all animals or non-human animals? Or does it differ between different kind of types?
Yeah. So when we're looking at it from, you know, say the 10,000 foot level, the most animals out there do have an endocannabinoid system, one that is very similar to humans. And in fact, we know that all vertebrae animals have endocannabinoid systems. And so by vertebrae, we mean animals with a backbone. So birds, reptiles, mammals, fish, amphibians, all these creatures have endocannabinoid systems. And even some invertebrate animals have endocannabinoid systems as well. So evolutionarily speaking, this is a system that has been around for millions and millions of years. You know, it's not something that just developed, you know, a couple decades ago or 100 years ago. It's been around for a very, very long time. And it exists throughout the animal kingdom. Now, is it exactly the same as humans? No, it's not exactly the same. You know, there are some slight differences, just like with how any other species, there's going to be differences from species to species. But for the most part, in terms of what it does, you know, regulating things like mood, appetite, metabolism, sleep patterns, inflammation, reproduction, it plays a role in that.
Yeah. So I guess there's a general level of applicability that exists across all animals that we know to have an ECS, let's say.
Right, exactly, right.
And so in that respect, and when you were talking about research a bit before, it occurred to me, in that respect, does a lot of human research on humans, can it apply in the veterinarian world as well? Or are there kind of animal-specific studies that you guys need to do? Or you need to see, rather?
Yeah, a lot of times it can. You know, there are things that we can bring over from the human side and apply it to the animal side. And a lot of the opposite happens as well, right? You know, a lot of times that's the way that clinical studies are performed is first what they'll do is they'll test things out in rats or mice and they say, okay, this has potential. And then they may test it out in other animals like pigs or primates and they say, okay, yeah, it seems like it's really got potential. And then they may test it out in humans. Now, sometimes that doesn't always work. You know, there's a number of times where they've tested things out in lab animals and they say, hey, it's got potential. And then they test it out in humans. And for whatever reason, it doesn't work in humans because the animals are not exactly the same or the laboratory conditions are not exactly the same as real world environments. But a lot of times that does carry over. You know, when we see things that could be beneficial in humans, we are able to apply it to animals a lot of times and vice versa as well.
Yeah. And so therefore, I think, is it the same typical conditions that cannabis is being used for in animals as they are in humans? And I'm just going to be kind of very high level, but things like pain and forms of anxiety and sleep as well. I don't know, do animals suffer from bad sleep?
They potentially can, yeah. And you know, to help people understand from an educational basis, I came up with an acronym a few years ago, and the acronym is PAINS. So it's spelled P-A-I-N-S, and it stands for pain, anxiety, inflammation, nausea and appetite loss, and seizures. And those are the things that we have good evidence for the use of cannabis with. And whether that's humans or animals, we do see benefits in both. There are other conditions as well that can benefit. So by no means is that all inclusive. There are other conditions that could be beneficial. There's some preliminary evidence for different things. I know a lot of people like to ask about cancer, and cancer is one that there are some interesting studies out there that show potential, but cancer is so difficult because it's not like you just get one type of cancer or two types of cancer. You have hundreds of different types of cancers, and how these cancers respond and act in different species can be different as well. So that's the challenging thing about that.
Yeah, I've done a couple of shows on that topic, and it's just so vast and kind of understanding just how much research needs to happen. So I can imagine the added layer of different species just sort of the mind boggles. But that's a really good acronym to kind of to hit the main sort of areas. And in your kind of experience, are you typically seeing a lot of animal patients that are coming from a specific part of those five kind of top categories?
Yeah, definitely as animals get older, a lot of them do come down with some degree of joint discomfort. And, you know, this happens a lot more in larger animals, but significant population of pets and animals in general do come down with hip and joint issues. And so it does work very well in a lot of those animals, and it does increase their comfort and provide increased comfort and better quality of life. You know, the other big one is anxiety issues. You know, a lot of times, whether it's from fireworks and the noise that's associated with those fireworks, or stress from the environment, you know, whether it's separation anxiety from the owners going back to work and having to leave their pet at home. You know, so these things are probably the two big ones that we see a lot throughout the animal world.
Yeah. So, yeah, really not dissimilar to humans, I guess. And I guess, you know, the THC component of it all, I hope I get this question right, but obviously in humans, the perceived side effect of THC from a therapeutic level is the psychoactive effect of it. Do you see this in animals as well?
You can. And so this is where it's important to get a good understanding, is that it depends on the amount of THC, right? And that applies to just about everything in life, right? You know, you need salt, right? You have to have salt in your diet, right? But too much salt is going to be bad for you. It's going to be unhealthy for you. You need oxygen to survive, right? We breathe oxygen, but if you're going to be breathing 100% oxygen, you're going to get oxygen toxicity, right? And so, you know, there is the amount that's appropriate for each patient and each condition. And so that's something that to keep in mind, is that THC in low enough doses, when it's used in small amounts, or appropriate amounts, we should say, does not cause a high. And whether that's humans or animals. And a lot of times it can bring about therapeutic benefits, because THC does have therapeutic value. You know, it's a partial agonist of the CB1 receptor, and it also interacts with a number of other potential cellular targets as well. And so to put a blanket statement over THC and say that THC is intoxicating and has no therapeutic benefits is really quite an ignorant statement, and is an unfortunate take, and one that's been fostered and fueled by decades of propaganda. It's unfortunate, but, you know, we need to rethink our approach to THC, because we have to understand that the dose is what's important, and that it has value, especially when we're talking about things like appetite stimulation, nausea, pain and discomfort. And, you know, especially looking at the preliminary studies of THC in cancer cells, there could be huge therapeutic value there. So to broadly dismiss THC as some sort of intoxicating, dangerous substance that's only used by stoners is to be scientifically unfair and irrational and detrimental to the patient groups that could potentially benefit from it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I guess maybe my question was more to do with, I guess, with THC, are there any kind of additional issues around the psychoactive nature of it when it's applied to animals versus humans? Is it difficult for a pet owner to control an animal if they're effectively stoned by having THC in it, or is it much the same with humans?
Well, for example, if an animal accidentally gets into its owner's stash or something like that, then the best course of action would have their veterinarian evaluate the pet, right? Because animals can be more sensitive to THC. And because of the differences in how their CB1 receptors are mapped out in their brain, they can experience different side effects compared to humans. You know, so for example, dogs have a high concentration of CB1 receptors in their cerebellum. And this is greater than in humans and other animals as well. And what that means is that if they get too much THC, for example, like if they got into the owner's stash or something like that, then their cerebellum gets affected. And the cerebellum is responsible for things like balance and motion and movement. And so that's why a lot of times in dogs that get into too much THC, we can't see a condition called static ataxia, you know, where they have difficulty balancing, where they're kind of swaying back and forth. And so anytime that happens, we do always want the owner to bring their dog to a veterinarian or their animal in general to a veterinarian, because the other thing is that we don't know what else they ingested. You know, a lot of times if they got into their owner's stash, then, you know, a lot of times human products are made with ingredients that may not be safe for animals. For example, chocolate.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so therefore, I presume that all your products are very low THC. They have some in it, but it's sort of on a low level where none of that is an issue.
Right. So the formulation is what's matter, and the amount that's utilized is what matters.
And what are the main kind of animals that you treat using cannabinoids?
Yeah, primarily it's dogs and cats because, you know, here in the U.S., that is the most popular two categories of pets. And I would assume that's actually the same case around the world. But there are other animals that, you know, people keep in their homes. And so we have had people use it for birds, rabbits, ferrets, rats, pigs, horses as well. So, you know, quite a broad range of animals that we've had experience working with and that we've seen benefits for.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. And so as we get towards the end, my last question is around regulation and the roles of regulators. So in the UK, our regulator is called the VMD, the Veterinary Medicines Directorate, I think. And they have not been very kind of open to CBD or cannabinoids in general, actually. And so I don't think it has to be an authorized medicine, and they've not authorized any medicines for animals in the UK, at least. Clearly, it's a different case in California. What's your general take on regulators that are overseeing this, and what's the reception been like from the veterinary field in relation to cannabis?
Yeah, you know, it's been challenging. And what we're seeing across the board is that in general, the veterinary aspect of legalization gets left behind or completely left out of the conversation. You know, that's one of the things that I always encourage emerging markets to do, is to make sure that when legislation is getting passed, that the animal component or the veterinary component is involved from the get-go. Otherwise, you are dealing with a potential patchwork of legislation where you get something passed and then, you know, the following years you make changes and amendments. And that's what we see a lot of times here in the US. But we're also seeing that in other countries, and we see that in the UK as well, right? Where CBD for people is perfectly fine and you can purchase it from just about any retailer. But for whatever reason, when it comes to CBD for animals, the UK has decided that no, that's not the case. And it just doesn't make any sense, right? Because essentially what you're doing is you're providing access to one species and saying another species can't have access to it, even though they can have the same benefits. So it's a very speciesist thing, I guess, if that's a word.
let's run with it. I like it. And so have you seen that differential kind of treatment of different agencies or different regulators approaching it differently? You know, like, so clearly the VMD is more conservative than the human medical profession in the UK. But have you seen a kind of similar thing in the US, or is everyone pulling in the same direction?
It's a little bit challenging because much of the attention has been focused on humans and, you know, less of the attention has been focused on animals. So in a lot of cases, you know, people are still asking, well, you know, does it really work in animals? And we see that on the veterinary side as well. You know, we still have a lot of veterinarians that are skeptical and that, you know, want more information and want more evidence. But I will say that over the past 6 years, we have seen a drastic turnaround in the number of veterinarians that have seen the benefits of CBD and cannabinoids for themselves. You know, we talked to a number of veterinarians that say that, you know, at first they were skeptical, but, you know, it wasn't until they've had these clients say, hey, I've seen a night and day difference, a remarkable turnaround in my pet's condition. And this was the only thing that changed, was the addition of cannabis or CBD or some sort of cannabinoid therapy. And so we do see kind of, you know, people have been kind of all over the place in terms of their stance. But as more evidence comes out, as more people start to see the benefits for themselves, then they're saying, okay, there is something of therapeutic value here, and we should be able to provide our clients and patients access to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's playing catch up, isn't it? It's funny. I've spoken to a European business focused on this area, and they showed me this sort of social media interaction around pet owners who had been using CBD, whether they were allowed to or not, in whichever country they were in. And there were just thousands of people who talked about these sort of life changing effects of CBD on their particular pets. So clearly there's a lot of anecdotal and real world evidence out there.
Yeah, you know, and when we look at evidence, the quality of anecdotal evidence is very low, right? Because we can't really utilize anecdotal evidence and put it up against formal clinical trials and studies. But the issue is that because of prohibition and because of the unwillingness for a lot of institutions and universities to study cannabinoid therapeutics, unfortunately, we have to look at anecdotal evidence and say, okay, at some point, you know, we have to say that this anecdotal evidence is of some value, right? Even though it's not of the same quality as a formal clinical study, you know, when thousands of people are saying, you know, this is what actually helped my pet, and this is the only thing that I've changed in their regimen, we have to say, okay, you know, is there some validity to what they're saying? And what can we draw from that?
Yeah, again, that's a topic for another day, I think, because that one's huge. But yes, 100% agree. Tim, thank you so much for joining me. It's been really fascinating, and it's a really interesting category and area. So I wish you best in your business. It'd be lovely to get you on down the track and see how you guys are getting on.
Yeah, happy to do it. So thanks for having me on, Anoush.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe, rate, review, and share the podcast. It will help me spread the good word on how this amazing industry is developing. I work with various cannabis startups to help them get funded and grow. I also work with corporates and international cannabis companies to help them understand and navigate the European cannabis sector. We're working with some great clients across the cannabis value chain, and we'd love to help you too. Please visit www.canverse.global to get in touch.